This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run. It's 6 a.m. on Monday, the 7th of March, the start of yet another week. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, together with Wang Xiaoning and Tan Chen Li. Good morning.
Hello, hello.
Good morning.
How was everyone's weekend? One word answers, please. How was your weekend?
All right.
Xiaoning?
Healthy.
Excellent. We'll talk more about that later. But let's give our listeners a preview of the stellar lineup of conversations we have this morning. Beginning at 7:15, we're going to discuss impending healthcare legislation with Code Blue Editor-in-Chief Bu Su-Lin. This includes the controversial amendments to Act 342, as well as the, dare I say, revolutionary tobacco control bill.
And then at 7:30, we will check in with Lucky Country, which is Australia, who is going through a spot of bad luck with flooding affecting the state of Queensland. We speak to economist Catherine Birch on how these developments impact economic projections.
And we're also ramping up our coverage of the Johor state elections all this week. Firstly, we're going to speak to Ben Sofian of the Merdeka Centre on how demographic trends could impact the vote at 7:45. And later on, after the breakfast grill, we'll be hearing from the representatives of both Bersatu and UMNO on how they view their prospects in the polls. So definitely tune in.
That's right. The Johor state elections will be held on March 12th. So that's this weekend. I think there's just going to be a lot of attention to what's going to happen because this will be the barometer for GE15 whenever it happens.
If you're the winner, you'll say it's the barometer. If you're the loser, you'll say, no, it's an anomaly.
That's right. So we are taking a quick break. You'll want to stay with us. We'll have all these conversations and more on The Morning Run, BFM 18. That was Tame Impala with Breathe Deeper, dedicated to all you yoga and mindfulness practitioners out there. You're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Mokhtar, Wang Xiaoning and Tan Chen Li. Now, the question we're exploring this morning is, how do you spend your free time? And I feel this is an apt question to ask coming off the weekend. There's an article in the South China Morning Post that talks about the most beneficial ways to use downtime. And Chen Li, you have the story for us.
Yes, that's right. It's about how you spend for your free time, or downtime is what you call it. So according to a research published in September 2021 in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology, researchers found that the high level of free time that is significantly associated with higher levels of well-being, but only up to a certain point. So don't think that if you have a lot of free time, it's good for you. Up to a certain point, it's actually bad for your mental health. So what's important here is to have a balance of mindless and mindful activities. Mindless activities include things like binge-watching your Netflix or whatever you'll be watching, or social media scrolling. And mindful activities would be things like online courses or physical exercise and all that. So balance is key. So I have a question for both of you. How do you guys spend your downtime?
All right, I want to go first and I want to dispute this categorization of social media scrolling as mindless. I say that I scroll social media very mindfully, indeed.
Are you trying to come up with an excuse for yourself, Shaz?
It's not an excuse, it's an explanation. Justification, that's right.
Yeah, justification as to why you are. Your finger just keeps moving left, right, up, down, right?
I am taking all my TikToks in and just understanding
and
the content.
Let me help you a little bit. You're preparing for the show, isn't it? Because you're actually adding to the information that you have.
Sure, okay, I'll take that. Thanks, Xiaoning.
And it's physical exercise with a finger.
Just one finger, okay. But are you guilty of it? Do you think you have the balance, Shaz?
I would say probably I err on the mindless side. I think it's just so easy sometimes when you're bogged down with work the whole week. And you know our hours. We're kind of on call 24/7 and just news is relentless, yeah?
Yeah.
So I do find that on the weekends, I may overcompensate with my mindless activities a tad.
Okay.
A tad.
I try not to look at the screen as much as possible unless it's work-related. So I have this internal rule that because we're not on air on Saturday and on Sunday, I try not to look at my computer from noon Friday until maybe Sunday 10 a.m. But you know I'm a big liar because I do disturb you all during the week over work, or when I see something interesting, I do go online. But I think what I try to do in terms of avoiding this mindlessness activity or whatever they call it, right, whether it's just Netflix watching or doom scrolling, is to actually chart out what I intend to do over the weekend so that it doesn't become one 72-hour block of nothingness, right? So to me, it's like, okay, from 10 to 2, I'm going to do this. And then from 7 to 8, I'll do something else. And I actually start out with the projects. As you all know, I like to bake, mm-hmm. which is why there's a chocolate cake in the fridge. So hence, no mindlessness. And I do like to exercise. So I carve out time so that it feels fulfilling for myself.
But what do you all do if it's like you have a period of downtime, say 1 month?
Wow, when was that the last time? I'm trying to think when I took a month off. And you know, I can't, because we worked throughout COVID. It was terrible. I mean, in the sense that we couldn't take leave. But I haven't had a month off. I'm looking forward to it, but I haven't.
I mean, I think the pandemic changed the experience for many people, yeah? Because during the pandemic, especially during the height of the lockdown, suddenly people had all this time that they couldn't spend outside of the house, where typically maybe you spent time commuting, but now you're at home.
Or socializing, hanging out with friends, right?
Right. So I think that was definitely a predicament that many people experienced during the pandemic. And not even now, when, for example, you have to observe quarantine, mm-hmm. whether it's because you've contracted COVID or because you're a close contact to a COVID case, there are a lot of people who do suddenly find that they have all these blocks of time.
Which was me.
So how did you spend it then, Chinley? Was it mindful or mindless?
Mindless.
You were recovering, right? I feel like those, if you're not healthy, I think really just resting and just building up that energy is what should be the priority.
You had a period in your life when you weren't working. So yes. Let's talk about that period, because that's a fairer period when you know.
Yes.
And did you find that time just drifted, or do you have to be disciplined in order to get things done, to achieve certain things?
I have a lot to say about this, actually, because it depends on how long that time period is and
whether
there is an end date.
Okay.
Because if you know that you're taking a sabbatical, say for like a few months, and you know there is a time end date to that, you will make the most out of it. So like I took a sabbatical before, and I made the most out of it. I took a few courses, I got a few certifications, and then there was also a period of time that I had no end date. I took a year off, and I don't have a next job on hand. And I was restless. Okay. I mean, no, actually, I wasn't doing much, because there was just, you know, you just feel a little bit not so
motivated.
You're just delaying
things.
So it
seems like whether you have a day off, or whether you have a month off, or whether you have a year off, have a plan.
Yes.
Otherwise, time just passes, and before you know it, it's gone, right? And you don't want that to happen either. So as this article says, the balance is a key. So plan those important events, those mindful events that help you recuperate.
So I just want to maybe insert this saying that I saw on TikTok, by the way. But I think it's a popular, or it's a motivational phrase that's been used over and over again. But it did make me think differently about how I spend my weekends, which is essentially use your weekends to build, not to escape. So it's a reminder that you can spend your time working towards the life that you want rather than using it to escape the life that you have. And I thought that was a powerful way to shift how I view things. But tell us what you think. You know, how do you spend your free time? Is it with mindful, mindless? How do you maintain that balance? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're heading into a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to discuss sporting boycotts and what their impacts are. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. The great Aretha Franklin with Sisters Are Doing It For Themselves, a reminder to women and men everywhere out there. Tomorrow will be International Women's Day, so I'm sure we'll have more programming looking at women's empowerment and just the economic contributions of women around the world. Today, though, we're looking at sports, and we're looking at boycotts, because we've seen the Russian invasion of Ukraine spark a wave of boycotts across the business, cultural, and sporting world. So this morning, we're discussing the impact of these boycotts, when they work, and what are the perhaps inadvertent repercussions.
Yeah, so on February 28th, after the Czech, Polish, and Swedish Football Association refused to play Russia in playoffs for the World Cup in Qatar, FIFA actually suspended Russia's national team from international competition. And then on May 3rd, in an international Paralympic committee also gave a boycott to ban Russian and Belarusian athletes from the Winter Paralympics. So my question here is, you know, should we actually keep politics out of sports? But can we?
Well, I feel like when it comes to this particular situation, a lot of the outrage is coming from the grassroots themselves. Yeah, it's coming from the public. It's actually coming from the athletes. So in the case of FIFA, you had, yeah, like you mentioned, the Czech, Polish and Swedish Football Association said that they wouldn't play with the Russian team. It was the individual players themselves who said, like, look, I can't in good conscience go against Russia on the football pitch when they are attacking Ukrainians on, you know, on land. So in a way, I think that does move the metrics in terms of when sporting organizations choose to boycott or not. Because we can see in other instances during the Crimean invasion, for example, mm-hmm. there wasn't any boycott during that time. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it depends on what the sentiment of the public is to push those boycotts through.
Okay, I'm going to be the devil's advocate here, right? I'm going to take a very different perspective and look at things from the athlete's perspective. So I'm going to assume I'm a Russian athlete, and now there's a ban against me and I can't play international football. Am I the one that's actually really going to pay the price? And the answer is yes, right? Because sporting events are close to me. So what are my options then? If my whole life, all I've ever done is train, and want to compete on the international level, and I can't because my country does something which I have absolutely, honestly, no control over, I pay the price,
exactly.
Right? And because I'm an athlete, it's so important that I perform during when I'm at my peak, right? And that window might be very, very small. It could be 2-3 years. And after that, the window is closed and I can't achieve sporting fame. Then am I the one that pays the price? Definitely. Is it fair then? You know what I mean? So I'm seeing it from another perspective.
Yes. And actually, my question here is, if you were to do these boycotts or stay away from these sporting events, how effective are these? You know, what can you really stop a war? I mean, by just expressing your emotion over this, over a sporting event, is that, I mean, other than not being fair, but is it really doing anything to help with the situation?
I feel like the sporting field or the sporting sphere is probably the lowest common denominator. Mm. It's the least, because you've got the, you know, these cultural, social, cultural spheres, then you've got the economic sphere, then you've got like the actual armed conflict sphere. And so I think where sports are concerned, it's the
bottom
most
rung.
Accessible way yeah. to take a stand on something. And I think that's what a lot of people are doing. I totally take your point, Xiaoning. This boycotts, and whether they're any kind of boycotts, yeah. whether they're sporting boycotts or economic boycotts, it is going to impact the ordinary people on the ground, the mm-hmm. individual. But that is why we elect leaders who can make smart decisions for the country so that they don't put these individuals in jeopardy. And that's the issue at the moment. The fact that you've got the political leaders who just cannot come to the table and come to a conclusion for the benefit of everyone.
But the problem is, when you're talking about Russia, it's not a democratic, although it claims to be, it isn't really one, right? So, you know, if let's say you belong to a despotic nation, what then do you do? Your options, I guess, what we saw during the Cold War is to run away, right? Exile yourself if you can, you know, which happened a lot in the 1970s and 1980s. East German and Russian athletes did that, right? But I'm just thinking, in today's day and age, if I do this to you and I ban you from sporting events, at this moment, okay, there's a common baddie enemy, right? The common baddie enemy is Russia. I wonder, will those tables be turned if one day, let's say, the baddie is a Western democracy? Are we prepared to then turn around and say, no, your athletes can't do this?
That's right.
You can't perform.
I think it's a question very well worth reflecting on.
And what if it's not, the competition is actually not human related, if it's a cat competition? You know, they don't have the right to choose their leaders. So it's a little bit going overboard, maybe?
Okay, sure. And Chen Liu is just mentioning this about the headline that Russian cats have been banned from international competition. It's 6:24 in the morning. You know, tell us what you think. Do boycotts work? Are they warranted? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're heading into the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin. And when we come back, we'll be taking a look at what's making headlines around the world. Here's Rooney with When Did Your Heart Go Missing to take you to the bulletin, BFM 89.9. That was Gemini and Leo by Helado Negro. That means black ice cream, by the way. He's a New York-based musician, born to Ecuadorian parents. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, together with Wang Xiaoning and Tan Chen Li. It's 6:40 a.m. in the morning, and it's that time of day when we take a look at what's making headlines around the world. Again, no surprises, the Ukraine invasion is still very much dominating global headlines.
That's right. And over the weekend, we've seen headlines on Bloomberg and a few other news portals. Visa and MasterCard has suspended their operation in Russia. And as well as Amex, actually, they just announced yesterday. So what they're going to do is basically the cards that's issued in Russia is not going to be able to use overseas, and cards overseas are not going to be able to use in Russia. That's what I understand for it to be.
So you have to use cash?
I think so.
Okay, so I know US dollars are short, so I guess you have to transact mainly in rubles then.
Yeah, and I mean, think of the Russians who's there right now.
Oh no, I have some rubles at home. But on a serious note, yeah, obviously what they're trying to do is that really extend the concept of sanctions, right? So it's not just government to government, but it's now business to consumers almost.
Yes.
And this is rather rare because I haven't seen it so far reaching in my lifetime, actually. It tends to be big picture ones, but never like where it impacts individuals. And I'm not sure how useful this will be or whether it will really change the minds of Russians. Because the argument is that, oh, only if the Russians really feel the pain will they perhaps move to change government. But it's not that easy to change a dictator, is it?
I don't think the aim of sanctions is to like, oh, we must target the Russian people. No, it's not that. They're trying to impact the Russian state, essentially. So the idea is if there's enough pressure on the Russian state, that will make them change course. But the impact of sanctions, like we discussed earlier, undoubtedly hit the common people. And we are seeing that in the lines of people at ATMs and Russian banks trying to withdraw money. I think there's just a lot of concern on whether they will be able to cope in the coming weeks, especially as sanctions are coming faster and fiercer. The U.S. is apparently looking at sanctioning Russian oil,
yes,
which would be a huge deal because 3%. Right now that is the only channel or one of the few channels where there haven't been any sanctions on it. It's still allowed to, business trade ties are still allowed to flow on that point.
Correct.
Will that change?
But that's going to hurt U.S. in the end. I mean, because it's like 3% of oil or Russian oil into the U.S. market, and summer is coming. So I don't know how they're going to...
Before the driving season, you
exactly.
mean.
So people will be going out, traveling and all that. And then 3% of oil off the market. And just 3% is crude and 8% of crude byproducts. So it's actually quite a significant portion of products of oil from Russia.
And I think that's the reason why it hasn't been sanctioned yet, right? Because other countries are well aware of the backlash that could come on them. But at the same time, we are seeing the conflict pick up in Ukraine. Headlines came overnight about attempts to do evacuation channels, which did not succeed because both sides said the other side weren't cooperating. But in the meantime, innocent civilians are getting killed. And so what do countries do next? I think that's what everyone's trying to look at. How do we manage everything? And separately, Vladimir Putin himself has said he sees sanctions as an act of war. So how is this playing out? It's preposterous that leaders at the top level cannot find a way to avoid bloodshed in dealing with their disputes.
Well, if they had any sense in the first place, would the war have started, right? So clearly, not everyone is being very rational to begin with. And you know, these humanitarian corridors only work if there's trust. And you're in a state of war. So it's not going to work in terms of the concept. But talking about these sanctions, and I'm taking it to another angle, which is, you're right, it's probably the ordinary middle class Russian that's going to be really, really hit. Because you're talking about credit cards and now Netflix. And then you're talking about Facebook. Which Facebook, actually, to be fair, the Russian government, you know, they put it, they banned it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really impact the really, really, truly rich. Because Guardian has an entire article on how London has become the place to be for Putin's oligarchs. And you really see their presence in London, especially during the months of summer, spring. And they've bought up swaths of very expensive real estate. You see them on Bond Street. You see them on Knightsbridge. They speak Russian. They're very distinctive. And they have turned London into their playground. So truly, if you're really, really rich, these sanctions don't mean anything. Because in the first place, you would have found another place to park your money. Whether you can use your credit card probably doesn't matter so much anyway. So I think how useful these sanctions will be. Probably not so useful in the medium term, but I think it's the messaging that probably what people want to send out, whether you're a company or whether you're a government.
Well, I do think Russian oligarchs are feeling the pinch, at least, even if it's not, it may not be super painful on them now, but we do see pressure on them. We see a number of Russian oligarchs that have been put on sanctions list among the West. We see the owner of Chelsea, Roman Abramovich, saying that he's going to sell Chelsea because it's become untenable for him to own these kinds of assets. Whether that will have a bigger impact, I think that still remains to be seen. But questions really should be asked about why they were allowed to flourish for as long as they did, perhaps, in these foreign countries. In any case,
everybody loves the money, Shas. Nobody questions it until, you know.
Well, I think we should question it now. 6:46 in the morning. We're taking a quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to take a look at what's making headlines in the local newspapers and portals. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. Friday, I am in love by The Cure. It is Monday, though, the 7th of March. You're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Xiaoning and Chen Li. 6:50 in the morning, we're taking a look at what's making the front pages of our newspapers and portals. Who'd like to start us off this morning?
I can go, since I'm going to talk about COVID and I just recovered from it. So on the headlines, actually, on the front page of The Star, it talks about long-term protection on COVID-19, those long COVID-19 haulers, as they call it. Apparently, in Malaysia, 62.4% of Category 4 and 5 COVID survivors still have persistent symptoms even after 3 months. And the government has actually set up you can actually register yourself, if you qualify, to be a person with disability, if you qualify. I don't know what are the requirements here. They didn't really quite say. There's also rehab centers that you can go for if you have some of those symptoms that include things like physical impairment, like muscle weakness, pain, fatigue, and a long list there, actually.
COVID-19 is one of those viruses and illnesses that we don't know too much about yet. We're still learning as we go along. And I think long COVID is one of those concerns that that is coming up as we get more cases of positive cases of COVID-19, right? So I am glad that the government is looking at this in terms of planning for long-term implications of COVID-19 that we
Correct.
Don't know of now.
Because it might affect their work as well, because they may not be able to perform or may not be able to report to work and stuff like that. So this may help people with long COVID symptoms.
I think last week, the Health Minister, Kari Jamaluddin, said that as many as 10 to 15% of people who have been infected with COVID-19 develop long COVID. So something that I hope policymakers are monitoring very closely.
Yeah, okay. And I'm turning our attention to the H Weekly. And of course, one of my favorite columns is the Frankly Speaking column. And it's entitled No More Premature EPF Withdrawals. And this is something I totally agree with, because I think there should be a limit. It is already done and dusted. We should not revisit this. After all, when EPF announced its dividend of 6.1%, they also revealed some very scary data in terms of how much savings people have left. What worries me is I see on social media, I also see on portals where some politicians are asking people or saying that the government should reconsider this one more time. And I'm like, there's no end to it, you know. COVID-19 has been around for 2-3 years. I'm not saying that people don't face economic hardships, but I think if we still need to go back and encourage people to take their EPF, something is truly wrong. We need to offer these people an alternative source of assistance. I'm not saying not help them, but think about it more strategically rather than asking them to take out their own money, by the way. It's not government money, it's their own money.
Agreed. I do think that EPF withdrawals should not be continued for now. Voluntary EPF withdrawals, I mean. I think really the focus now should be on how do we rebuild that fund. I think still a lot of discussions on what's the best way to do that. And it really, we need to look at the overall economic structure and just, it's time for those tough decisions, but whether they'll be made, especially given the political climate
yes.
and with everyone looking to go to elections,
Because everybody wants to be a popular politician, right? But a good politician is the one that makes the difficult and hard decisions. Yeah.
Indeed.
I've got another part of business news, and I don't know whether this is true because it comes from Job Street. It's page 16 of the New Straits Times, and says that average salary growth rate stands at 3.2%. This is a Job Street survey that they did for 2022. Certain industries saw salaries decrease due to the impact of COVID-19. Unsurprisingly, food and beverage, hotel, restaurants, building and construction and sales and marketing, but apparently it's 6.3% on average. Let us know whether you caught. Just 3.2%, excuse me, not 6.3%. I'm curious.
All right. And if I look at this other headline, that it's a rather unfortunate headline, but in the Malaysia Insight, there's a headline, Police Report 12th Custodial Death. Mm. And it was just a few weeks ago that we were discussing the issue of custodial deaths when that number was 9. It has increased. And do listen to our podcast where we spoke to MP for Batukawan, Kasturi Pato. We spoke to her on how can we better hold authorities accountable for these custodial deaths. The podcast title is Lack of Accountability for Custodial Deaths, sadly, something that is a very long-term issue that needs to be resolved.
Now, I'm looking at Malaysian Kini, the portal, and it says the article is TGV apologises after complaint Batman screening restarted due to late VIPs.
Oh,
did you
okay.
see this on social media?
I saw that. It's one of the box office, right?
Yeah, so well, you know it's a cinema operator, right? So apparently TGV, they apologised to its patrons following complaints that a showing of The Batman was restarted 45 minutes after it began screening due to some VIPs arriving late. So TGV said, we would like to sincerely apologise to all guests. They've been offered a refund and also 2 complimentary tickets, but I didn't know this was happening.
I have to say, 45 minutes after the movie starts, that's not good etiquette at all.
No, firstly, why do you need to restart? If people are late, they're late. You know, if they're a VIP or whether they're an ordinary Joe, too bad. Too bad. You know what time the show starts, right? Say 7 p.m. It's on your ticket. You bought it. Turn up on time. Why do you need to inconvenience anyone else?
Exactly.
If you were late, buy another ticket. Watch another time.
Indeed. Tell us what you think. Have you ever been in a situation where an event had to restart because somebody came late? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. It's 6:56 in the morning. We are heading into the 7 a.m. news bulletin. And then after that, we're going to take a look at how the global markets ended the trading week on Friday. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.